This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org.
Could you tell your story through animation? Well, that's what one Chicago native is doing, using the art of drawing to highlight her own experiences and others like her. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Chantel Alonzo is a first-generation Filipino-American who was born with microtia and atresia, genetic conditions that resulted in her being born deaf in her left ear. At the age of 10, she received a cochlear implant. It was a turning point in her life, and she's now studying animation in New York, creating short films that celebrate underrepresented communities. I sat down with Alonzo during her recent visit back in town to learn more about how she uses art to tell stories like hers. And she starts with her experience growing up in Albany Park.
In my elementary school, there were so many people that came from so many places that it felt like everybody was coming to the table with all these experiences. And it felt like just a beautiful mesh of just, even though people came from so many places, like we all had like the similar story of just like being in the neighborhood.
Yeah. So the diversity, you think, had an impact on you when you say people came from all over the place. That had an impact on you.
Yeah, I have been so lucky to find some of my closest friends in this neighborhood too. And we all come from similar stories of coming from immigrant backgrounds. And it's this sort of thing where you learn that even though you come from different places, people have similar hardships, which kind of affected how I see the world and I see how I see media reflected in that manner.
So tell me, how old were you when you actually realized that you were hard of hearing?
Oh, I mean, it's one of those things, since I was born this way, it's the one of those things that it was just my matter of fact. Like the same way where like the sky is blue and the grass is green, I'm like, okay, I can only hear about my right side. And it's only when we began to see my audiologist, and I'm like, okay, there's something a little different going on here.
So there's no like early memory of realizing, oh, my hearing might be different from other family members or other friends of mine?
You know, I did have some early occasions. So there's two things in particular that comes with being hard of hearing that I don't have access to. One of those things is localization. So I remember being really young and I remember hearing this beautiful bird call and I was looking around trying to find the bird, and I couldn't until my brother had to point it out to me. So that was one memory I have where it's like, oh, something a little different is going on.
Mm.
And then the other thing is more of a cocktail effect sort of thing where it's harder for me to point out, to find like distinct voices in a very crowded room. So that kind of made me realize that my learning experience in a classroom was different.
How did that impact you as a child?
When I was younger, at least before the Baha implant, it was really easy to become overwhelmed, especially by large spaces. So subsequently, it became easier to kind of just like detract myself from the social situation and kind of like draw myself inwards.
Like withdraw,
yeah,
from everything. Did you have other deaf individuals in your life at the time?
No, none at all.
So you were the only one who looked like you?
Yes.
Essentially, yes. At that time. So you got the cochlear implant around the age of 10, as I mentioned. Do you remember when you first put it on? What was the first thing you heard?
Well, we were in the doctor's office, so it was simply everybody's voices being louder. It felt kind of like the way that I have these headphones on right now. It was kind of that way where it was like a louder.
Right. You're hearing my voice come through in your headphones right now, and mm-hmm. It sounds like amplified.
Yes.
Right. Which is not normal, right? If we were in an elevator with each other, I wouldn't quite sound as loud.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the overall change like for you then with the cochlear implant? Because everyone I know that has one, they talk about how there's an adjustment period.
Oh, for sure.
You got to get used to it.
Oh, I remember being really young and having such a big, like, I really didn't want to wear it because I didn't understand how useful it was to me. As I mentioned, like, there is a specific way that I understood living life. So I'm like, I like who I am right now. Why would I wear this thing that just makes everything louder? I mean, I would find out later. It was definitely a very useful tool and there was a lot I was missing out on. But like the original adjustment period was like, why, why does everything have to be louder?
Well, for sure. You've got this very positive mindset, though, that I love about this whole journey. And it seems like you've learned to accept yourself as you are.
For sure.
And this is really important. And I'm especially pleased at the fact that you realize this at a young age. Why was that the case? How did you get to realize that so early? Did you have a great support system? Is that part of it?
Mm-hmm. I think it was, I have a very loving family, but I think I somewhat credit to, and this also kind of feeds into like the type of work that I want to see in the world, was the amount of like the media and entertainment I took in growing up. I think a part of the reason why I was trying to reject this tool so much is because there's a lot of messages I had seen through TV and media about mm-hmm. this whole thing about embracing who you are and having that really positive like self-image of yourself, of just accepting all your differences.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
You're 21 years old now.
Yes.
You're animating media of your own, and you're sharing a very similar message to what you just talked about. Mm-hmm. Accept yourself. Embrace who you are. Embrace your background, your community. Where does your interest in animation come from?
Yes. So my interest in animation became a huge synthesis of a lot of things I loved growing up. So this went from the comics I would read in my local library to my very deep, passionate love of theater, to my deep, passionate love of my community and wanting to find some way of having that visibility. And animation just becomes a marriage of all of those things.
Yeah. How do you tell some of those stories using animation?
There are some films where I've managed to do this before, where when I was younger, I would be in a lot of situations where I'd be able to listen to other people's stories and to listen to their narratives and their rise and fall, similar to the way of a narrative of animation and film works. Mm. So it's kind of adapting these stories that have a lot of heart and translating it into a visual medium with characters and a lot of visual aspects that feed back into the emotional core of the story, down to like the colors and music and all such.
Interesting. You've done some work for Deaf History Month.
Yes.
This was back in April.
Yes, I did. I had the great pleasure of recently being commissioned by Giphy to create a sticker pack for Deaf History Month. It was the first time where I've really been able to fully integrate this part of my identity into my art. And it was really powerful in knowing that I was creating something for the community like me and for people like me who wish to be able to show these like our like identity through our art, and having my art basically being able to like translate this part of myself was mm-hmm. really amazing.
And for those of us who aren't familiar, what's Giphy?
Oh, it's like a GIF company. Like
making the moving images
yes.
that we like to spread around online and
yes.
share, for sure. You eventually joined Social Justice Theater.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
So there is a company back in Albany Park Theater Company. And so then they did a lot of stories. I had mentioned I spent a lot of time hearing out immigrants and people in my community.
Yeah.
So this was part of that work and just translating it onto the screen or onto the stage because it was a theater company. And it's the same way of how I do that through my work, through animation of what I just described. Mm-hmm. It was that, but through theater.
As an animator and as a storyteller, Chantel, what do you think is often missing when it comes to how deaf people are represented in the media?
Well, specifically with animation, one of the main ways that we come to understand how the deaf community communicates is through sign language. And there's a specific technological difficulty that comes with, I am sure a lot of artists can relate, that hands are already hard enough to draw.
So, oh, that's right. I hear it's the most difficult thing to draw on the human body.
For sure. I mean, there's a lot of appendages and, you know, all those joints inside those appendages. And being able to time that in a way that clarifies, like, basically the, you know, like, sign language is already difficult enough on the production and budget of media.
Mm-hmm.
And also the fact that a lot of animation also relies on that, like, aspect of audio. So trying to find a way that somehow communicates to people who can fully hear the lives of people who fully cannot, it would be a great, like, translation.
Chantel, is there something that you want to sort of make clear? Any sort of misconceptions that you think people in general have about the deaf community? What do you think people think they know about what it's like to be deaf in the world?
I think that it feels like it would be somehow less capable for us to engage in social situations. At least speaking from my personal experience, it doesn't. It just means that there has been more work that has to be done on my end to accommodate. And it's not low energy, but it has been a history of kind of building up this experience of using, like, physical effort to be as socially engaged, but it doesn't mean that we are any less capable of being the same social presence and doing anything that fully hearing people can do.
I'm going to ask you a similar question about some of the other communities that you like to put a spotlight on. I mean, why do you think it's important to include immigrant stories, and what's missing right now in the media when it comes to immigrant stories, particularly Asian American stories and, mm-hmm. and Filipino American stories? What are you not seeing that you would love to have seen?
Well, I think about my experiences growing up watching media, and it's that sort of experience where you don't see the community that you're surrounded with and that you love represented in media. Like, my parents, my friends' parents, all having these really impactful stories that all seem to be told in, like, the greater scheme of, you know, of how our world works and how politics works. And I feel like there is a very specific heart that comes with a lot of these communities that I wish to see more.
Now, some of your short films, I hear, are on film festival circuits
yes.
right now. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How does that feel?
Oh, it's very daunting in a way. So at my school, I've been very much taught the value of seeing you work on a big screen. And it becomes a more immersive experience where you're seeing something very large and you're able to kind of watch the reactions of the people around you, and people get to walk up to you afterwards. And I've gotten a lot of comments of people really connecting to my work. And I feel like that really solidifies, like, why I want to do this, where as long as it reaches those people that have, like, a similar background that could emotionally connect that way, it's just so amazing
yeah.
and powerful.
I'm watching you light up as you talk about this. Where can people watch your work?
So as of the moment, there are some films that are going through the festival circuit still. I do have some up on my website, which would be a whole thing to spell, but I do
give it your best shot.
So my online handle on YouTube and my website is Mishi Piku. So that's MISHIPIKU.
Well, before you go, I mean, talk about any aspirations you have then for your animations and films in the future.
Absolutely.
Where do you want to go from here?
So I created a goal when I was in seventh grade about where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. So I had known from seventh grade that I wanted to go to School of Visual Arts for animation. And since then, it's been my goal since that moment to become a story artist, an animator in the industry, continuing to tell these powerful stories and maybe to someday work with a studio as a director or story artist or animator, like helping a team create that vision.
We've been speaking with Chicagoan Chantel Alonzo about her efforts to spread awareness about the deaf as well as immigrant communities through her animation work. Great meeting you, Chantel. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Micah Yasin and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. It was edited by me and Meha Ahmed. Want to stay on top of the latest news in Chicago? Well, make sure to sign up at wbez.org/resetnews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.